But,
well, and I learned from Denny, but from other people as well, Victor at several times wanted to never talk to Willamette Week again. And Denny said, you can't do that.
Right.
You have to talk. And, you know, right. He had his weekly availabilities and all that kind of stuff. And
He was always accessible, surprisingly courteous, and, you know, and he probably knew what he was in for.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I wished I'd known him after I did my Washington Monthly experience. It wasn't such a knee-jerk, you know, it's the good guys and the bad guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, I actually grew up in Washington County, and, you know, I was a page in the 75 legislative session.
Uh-huh.
And that was the year that it was 22-7-1.
Yeah.
With Charles Hanlon, when he won beat Bill Holmstrom. I think the last non-affiliated candidate to ever win any kind of an election.
We had one legislature that above. Got close this time.
Yeah, Lee.
Yeah.
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 Although I think he was an independent party.
Yeah, one. Exactly.
He was not a non-affiliated candidate. But, I literally at the last minute got a chance to... I was not sure I wanted to go back east again, but, you know, I was middle of my term, and I can't remember how it all came up. Oh, Blaine, you know, Tom Marsh, who was my high school teacher, who was in the legislature, somehow said, well, Blaine Whipple could probably help you get a page job, and Blaine, who just passed away, I don't know if you had a chance to talk to Blaine, but Tom Marsh said, have you Tom?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
I have not read his book. Have you?
Mm-hmm.
You haven't either?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tom's a real bright guy. He's one of my best social studies teachers, and got elected along with Nancy Riles. I think Nancy might have won the seat after he left. But, so 75, I just, Attia was the minority leader, I think, in the 75 session.
Yeah.
And joked about, you know, in the caucus they could do it in the back phone booth.
Right. Yeah. And I actually, talking to Wally Carson,
as
he was unraveling the poster-sized picture of that, got the story about how that happened.
God, it was the story of which again?
they actually had a picture taken in the phone booth.
In the phone booth?
Yeah.
Did they really?
Apparently the Klamath Falls newspaper heard about it and sent somebody up and said, oh, you guys got to get in there.
You guys got to do that, yeah. Jason Bowe, and there's the others, Vic. God, those two people are dead now, Burbage. Is John Burns still alive?
Don't know.
Keith Burns? Wally Carson would be great.
Yeah, talk to Wally. He's
to talk to. Ed Fadley, is he still alive?
He is. I actually hope I can talk to him because he and Victor hated each other when Ed was the speaker.
Well, that's a testament to Vic. Fred Hurd. Now, there's, you know that story, right?
No, I know the name, but I don't know.
Fred Hurd was the Senate president in... I think the 79-81 session. So after Beau left, Fred, who was a teacher from Klamath Falls, he wore braces, geeky looking guy. I mean, look at that picture.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Fred met a somewhat ignominious end after meeting somebody at a conference somewhere, and buying a six-pack of beer and checking into his hotel room under the name of Jack Ripper, who was another senator at the time.
Yes.
And so the resulting scandal, here's a closeted gay, very bright. I think he ended up moving to California. But he was pretty young. I mean, he was born in 1940, so he'd be 75 years old. And... attained a position of power and was right in the middle during those years of stuff. And wouldn't he be fun to track down? Tony Meeker?
You ever talk to him?
Of course. I don't know. Jack Ripper would be 95. Bob Smith has passed away?
No, Bob Smith's with us. He's out of Medford.
Mike Thorne, of course.
Yeah, Mike Thorne.
George Wingard. George would be 80. But George was a liberal Republican from Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
And Ted Halleck did a lot of work here. I don't have a 75 blue book. I need to find one when I go to PALS next time.
Yeah, if you're at Vern Duncan's house, it's no problem because he has every single
one. Oh, I bet that's right. His cousin in the,
or his nephew in my politics class that I'm teaching. Heard, I think the last I heard, he ended up in California.
Okay.
Dell Isham.
Mm-hmm.
Served then with, I'm trying to think of other Republicans, yeah. So, isn't that Hamby still?
Oh, no. She died several years
ago. She died, what I thought.
Yeah.
Hannah died. Yeah, so here's Fred Hurd, the 81 session. And he might have lost his job then to, so 81, Fadley was the president of the Senate. That's right. He was just a preening peacock of a guy. Monroe's still around. Miles has passed away. Steve Starkovich. Cliff Trout. Maybe. So I ended up working as just a page, just observed Vic. I ended up getting a job with Ted Halleck, who then kind of championed me in 1978, right after I came back from college and didn't know what quite to do with myself. And after 3 months of work, I got an offer to work for a newspaper, two of them actually. And then Halleck came up and said, you need to work on Tom McCall's campaign, when he ran in 78. So during that 78 window, when Vic, of course, had tried in 74 and failed, I'm trying to remember, he ran in the primary against Clay Myers?
Yes.
And Clay won, and then got beat. And, all the focus on, Tom, is he going to run? Is he not going to run? Mm-hmm. That story that I think Tom Bates did in Oregon Magazine, Decision at Land's End, which you probably read. And then you have Tom, you got Atiyah, and you got Roger Martin. And I was doing a little campus organizing and doing some press release stuff, but it was chaos in that campaign. Kim Duncan was the campaign director. Melinda Eden, who later is on the Power Planning Council, is now married a rancher in eastern Oregon. Don Jarvie, Don Jarvie?
Mm.
Don was McCall's odd-even gasoline guy.
Oh.
The guy that came up with the idea. He worked for GTE Phone Company. And Jarvie. And then I think went back to work at the phone company. He was out of Washington County. GTE was a Washington County-based company. And he then came in the campaign. He was kind of the ideas person. All these ahead-of-time ideas, telemetry and sensors with satellites that tell you how much water to, 30 years later. Tom would love giving these speeches. And campaign staff would go, but you have a Republican primary to win. Well, he wasn't going to worry about it. And actually, no one paid much attention to Atiyah. They thought Martin. And Martin kind of attacked him. And, Atiyah came back at one point. Tom, I remember coming into the office one morning and saying, there's Proposition 13 in California. There's something there. People are talking about it. We should be addressing this.
Mm-hmm.
And almost to a person, his campaign advisors and staff go, it's a bunch of crazy people doing it. And if I recall correctly, Atiyah did address it. And I don't know
if he did in the primary.
But in terms of it, but my recollection was that he positioned himself as sympathetic to it and would talk about high property taxes in the 78 primary. And I think it didn't pass in California until November.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was like Tom, who had lots of faults and he was very undisciplined, and he was dealing with the troubles with Sam during this campaign, and it'd be hard to get him to go out in the evenings and do events. You didn't think he needed to because he's so well known, et cetera, et cetera. That he had the instinct that this was not to be ignored.
Yeah.
And he ended up officially ignoring it because of all the advice, and he didn't want to go there. I don't think that Atiyah did. Atiyah also, though, benefited running in 74.
Mm-hmm.
And arguably had saved up all those names, had gotten back to people, had organized early on. I don't know who the...
Thousands and thousands of 3x5 cards.
He basically followed the Mark Hatfield, Jerry Frank model. And I don't know the extent to which, you know, the two of them, they probably worked fine together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's always interesting, you know, go to the Warm Springs Indian Reservation where Atiyeh is revered.
Yeah.
As is Mark Hatfield.
Yeah.
And, you know, to what extent did they work hand in glove on the tribal stuff?
I mean, yeah.
Have you?
I'm getting more of a sense of that.
Roy Samsel. Do you know Roy Samsel?
No.
Roy is was the Institute for Tribal Government person here until he retired about a year ago, 962-0950. Roy worked for Hatfield at a young age as governor.
Mm-hmm.
Was on a Senate staff, and Roy knows everyone in Indian country.
Fantastic.
And Roy can give you help you with all sorts of introductions. But it struck me that, you know, that Atiyeh went out and, you know, not big on charisma, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
McCall would often, you know, McCall people would kind of, boring. Just out-hustled, out-worked. I don't know. I think the election return showed him doing well in virtually every county.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money he ended up raising or where it came from. That would be interesting. But, you know, 78, we're still spending relatively modest amounts of money for those kinds of campaigns. And it's kind of interesting with Straub. I mean, the economy's booming in 78.
Mm-hmm.
But there's this widespread sense that Straub, you know, the magic is gone. Halleck walks in and Halleck gives that walks into Willamette Week one day, and I think it's in the fall of 77, and says, you know, Tom needs to run.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Tom, I think, finally decided in February of 78, because remember, that's when I was agonizing over, do I become an editorial writer at the Eastern Oregonian in Pendleton for at least the next 2 years for Mike Forrester, or do I... you know, decide to do this kind of once in a lifetime, someone I always, you know, grew up admiring. Of course, I was out of work in three and a half months. Atiyeh wins, and Oregon is still economically booming, so it's not a set of messages, I think, around the recession that would, of course, come later. I go off to work at Willamette Week, covering county government, Washington County, but then a gig at the legislature. And so I did the 79 and 81 sessions and all the special sessions in between. And, it's probably pretty safe that we had kind of written a story about, you know, Vic Atiyeh as conservative Republican, conservative for the time. He wasn't a Tom McCall. Ronald Reagan, of course, gets elected midway through there. I have no idea what their relationship was.
Not great.
Yeah, probably not great.
Vic was a real Ford guy, and then liked Bush Senior a lot.
Yeah, I would.
That's his kind of guys.
Yeah, I think I imagine that was right. I think the headline they put on the 1979 legislative thing was "All Motion, No Movement." For it, because, you know, the 79 session is at the apogee of Oregon budget. Big issues around property tax relief and the HARP program, doing something to give people money to stave off what, I think there had been, a 78 ballot measure, right, on property tax relief, or was it 1980?
I think it might be 80, but I just talked to Hardy Myers, and I was going to go through and look at all those things. And I took the weekend off.
God! but we had one. It was Ray Phillips was the first of these. And Don McIntyre kind of took up the cudgel.
He was in the '80s.
Reduces property tax payable by homeowner and renter. It was Measure 11 in the 78 election.
Okay.
So this is the first of these, and of course the California one wins. But it's $383,000 to $467,000, so it's not huge. And did it come up again in 80? Constitutional real property tax limit preserving 85% of District 77 revenue. It was Measure 6. In 1980, and that might have been the Beware of Tricks in number 6.
I think
the one. Or was that something
else? I think
else?
That's later.
I think it might be later.
I think it's later.
You might be right.
That's one of the campaign buttons I inherited from my mother that hangs in my office.
Constitutional real property tax limit preserving 85% of district's 1979 revenue. So in 82 it comes back, and it's 504,000 to 515.
Yeah,
barely
so
loses.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was really seems to be the pattern through the 80s.
Right.
There were like three or four.
84 was measure two. It fails again by almost the same amount.
Yeah.
Razor thin, and then it doesn't happen again.
Is there an 80? Might be one after Vic leaves. Maybe 88. So I think there's at least one more before 90.
Yeah, so in 86, there's there's a sales tax proposal.
Yeah, that's
limits
the last.
Amends constitution, limits property tax rates and assessed value increases. So it was
right.
6 and it was 9. And then homeowners, renters, property tax relief limitation measure. All these initiatives that are happening in 86, and he's gone by then.
And well, 86 is he's leaving, and he is the one who's
that's right.
He's the one who's pushing that sales tax deal.
Yep, in the famous comic book.
Yeah,
which I actually didn't think was a problem. I mean, but it got roundly criticized because it was. But you know, passing a sales tax is not easy, and obviously we proved it for the 11th or 9th time.
Yes.
No, I think that's right.
And I actually have Jerry Thompson's entire notebook filled with everything for that
campaign. Yeah. So, you know, the 85 legislature, so I'm working for Vera, and Tom Troop, who was the Wunderkind who tried to, you know, ran for speaker, Rick Bauman, you know, you got a couple of two very bright guys there that, you know, Carl Hostick, of course, was on the Revenue Committee, Bruce Hugo, I don't know if Bruce is still alive, but he's out of Skip Hoos. But, you know, God, Ron Cease, you're going to talk to Ron. Stan Bunn was in the legislature during a lot of Vic's time.
That'd be a good one.
Mary Burroughs, out of Eugene, who was a progressive liberal Democrat. Ted Kaloric, out of Beaverton, who I think...
he's a landlord in my neighborhood, so
is
I see him fairly frequently.
and Sally Ron Ekus is still around. Wayne Fawbush, I heard. Fawbush was... Yeah. So that group of Fawbush, Bauman, Troop... all of whom had kind of opposed Vera, and of course Vera won the speakership. They were right smack in the middle of all sorts of the of all that sales tax government. So you got lots
of contact
with
Vera. I have something that didn't work.
You know, I tell you that I've seen Vera once in the last couple years, and I'm not even sure she remembered me.
Okay.
She hangs out.
I mean, Norma Paula's issues with that as well.
Yeah, have you talked to Norma?
I talked to her daughter and her daughter-in-law. And so what I'm going to do, apparently...
Yeah, Jennifer Viviano
is
the person who used to work for me.
And apparently Norma is okay sometimes, so I'm going to do all her oral histories that she's done. And if I have specific questions, I'll go.
Yeah, the longer-term memory is actually pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I saw her about... 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
The short-term stuff isn't.
Yep.
She'll ask you the same question, you know, three or four times.
Yeah.
Vera may be the same way. I was kind of in a group of people, and she lives just a few blocks from here. So she lives in that park. So you often can find her around this time of day or maybe between 9 and 10 in the coffee shop in that Park Avenue Cafe that's at the...
Yeah, I've got 1511 Southwest Park.
Yeah.
Number 901 is...
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that works.
So that works, and see what you might be able to do with that.
Yeah.
Of course, Kitzhaber would be a good interview, too.
We'll see what
happens.
Yeah,
if he'd stayed in, I was, because he's really important for the last couple of years of Vic.
Yeah, he is.
And what do I do? Call the governor's office and say, hi, I'm doing this book. I don't want to talk about anything.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Promise, right. Cross my heart, hope to die. But I'll be tracking him down.
Yeah. So, you know, in terms of what I have to offer, I mean, I think it's pretty thin in the sense that, you know, I did the good, the bad, and the awful. I covered the legislature. You know, my sources were far more on the Democratic side than not. You know, I ended up, the Republicans that I would talk, I mean, George Wingard was all Nancy. Tony Van Fleet is would be a treasure to interview. So.
Yeah, and he knows my grandmother, or knew my grandmother.
There you go.
So.
But, you know, here's a guy that gets elected at, again, the apogee of Oregon economic miracle. I think 1979 was the last year in which our per capita income was more than 100% of the national average. We've been cutting timber to beat the band. I did a few things on the timber industry back then. I think 79 was about spraying herbicides like 2,4-5-T and 2,4-D. And Vic seemed to be pretty typical, reflexive supporter of everything, you know, timber. Mm-hmm. You get the housing prices go up into 79. And then, you know, I remember talking to Bernie Agron's years later, and he kept referring to the depression in Klamath County. And I realized he wasn't talking about the 30s. He was talking about that 1980-1983 period where, you know, the unemployment just spiked to these horrible levels. I mean, really, some ways what happened in 2008 was not as fierce as it was.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of the rapidity and the distance fallen. And
I grew up in Medford, and the results of that 82 recession are huge areas of undeveloped land where there used to be big mills.
Yeah.
And they just simply aren't there.
Yeah, they just disappear. And, you know, ghost towns, all those wigwam burners.
Oh, yeah, wigwam burners.
Yeah, where'd you go to high school? You went to high school?
Medford.
In Medford, okay.
Yeah, yeah. So while you were in high school watching Watergate in the library, I got permission from eighth grade to stay home.
Yeah, interesting.
And watch.
Interesting.
So.
Yeah. Where the Frommeyers, you know, hailed from.
Dave was, just before he went off to college, he babysat the woman who became my first girlfriend.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah.
And you know, our take on that, especially when Hatfield then enters in, all those contracts get stranded, people don't want to pay them, they get undone. Watt comes in, Reagan administration, and the cut, which had sort of, you know, going up and then fell in the recession, then they just pumped it up again pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, by the time you're in the 80s, you've been different views on that. But the one I think that historians, economic historians, will look at is that because people didn't want to, that had done so hard, had hurt the mills, that as soon as the economy started coming up, you start cutting again like you used to, not realizing that what you now have left is less, and you run headlong into the spotted owl, and then you get an even steeper, you know, decline later, so you're really running the roller coaster. But, you know, the environmental movement is really strong. It's what's electing a lot of Democrats. It's a natural point of tension on there.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up doing a story in 80-81 on plant closures.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of met Brad Witt.
Oh, there you go.
Who's working for the FSCO. Mary Botkins was in there, too.
Uh-huh.
There was a big Boise Cascade strike, too, around that time. So I started going around the state and go down to Coos Bay, go out to Eastern Oregon at the Hines Mill, go into the Willamette Valley, the Champion Mill that's going on. A couple of stories that I'm sure the T administration didn't appreciate. We had an Industrial Development Revenue Bond program back then where you could go and get relatively cheap money, because the other mm-hmm. thing that Tia was presiding over was interest rates that were spiking,
yeah.
at, you know, 15-20%. So these companies could get them for, you know, maybe 7 or 8%. Champion closed its mill in Lebanon, claiming it was losing money, but the IDRB application mm-hmm. revealed that the problem wasn't losing money; they just weren't making as much as they'd hoped to make.
Yeah.
Earl Pryor, Laura yeah. Pryor's. Yeah. You know Earl?
Just the name.
Okay, Laura is still out there. I mean, she's Gilliam County. She was kind of the person. You know, she's a kick. You know Laura? Oh gosh, she'd be really fun to talk to. She's still around. She's out of Gilliam County, Condon, I think. Mm-hmm. And I remember her husband was a self-described PAF Republican who I ran across, because he thought this was a terrible program, because he said the small Main Street business person doesn't have access to this cheap money.
Yeah.
They're paying the
yeah.
extra, and they're having to compete. They put in, I think, a Kmart or something in the Dalles. Or proposed for it that was going to compete with the downtown, and he said, "Here's the government encouraging that to happen." It was, you know, I think it was a TIA initiative to try to, you know, help businesses develop. But the plant closure thing, you know, I went around. I did a 5 or 6 part series. The other 5 or 6 part series I did was called "The Spraying of Oregon," about all these herbicides that mm-hmm. you know we're putting on.
Yeah.
And so it was no small irony that, you know, in the 82 campaign, when Atiyah just took off after Ted on that.
Yeah.
And, you know,
the plant closure bill.
A few years later, Ronald Reagan, you know, did it.
Yeah.
In a lesser form, but just skewered Ted. Now, Ted had lots of other problems, probably in the 82 race. But it was, you know, you think about the guy's appeal of winning as a Republican amidst very good economic times.
Right.
And then being able to just beat the shit out of the Democrat during bad economic
times. When the economy
times.
Has just fallen,
you know,
to the floor.
We
yeah.
blame it all. We can blame it mm-hmm. all on a T and da da da. But, you know, there's
yeah.
a bit of Teflon about the
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
And a likability factor. And, you know, here's a guy who's, you know, who's from the Middle East. He's Syrian, mm-hmm. you know, descent. And, but, you know, that didn't matter at all. He was a respected business person. Oh yeah, Tia Brothers, you know, mm-hmm. he, you know, had a brand on the mm-hmm. that side that was among those who knew.
Apropos of our now former governor, when I talked to Vic's older brother Edward, who's still with us,
mm-hmm.
when Vic was elected, the Tia Brothers made a conscious decision: no business whatsoever with the state while he was governor.
Yeah, there you go. So interesting.
And I don't know if they did any business before. That's one of my research projects.
Yeah.
But clear line, nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, and Vic would have been that sound, you know, seemed like how Vic was. You know, there were just things that were very obvious in terms of the integrity issues.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't any whiff of scandal, I think, in that entire period. And I may have misremembered mm-hmm. something, but, you know, we were always looking for stuff.
There's a couple that I'll want to ask you about scandally things. So,
So the other things I kind of remember, and you know, and I'd have to go back and read all the Willamette Week stuff. But you know, I covered the 79-81 legislature, and
mm-hmm.
you know, others covered it too. I mean, Russell Sadler, if Russell's still around,
yeah.
I think he is down in your part of the world. Talked to Russell a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He'd be really good to talk to. Jeannie Burdick, of course, covered the 75 campaign for Associated Press. That's where I got to know her and her then-husband,
cool.
Ed Grossweiler. Ed is still around,
mm-hmm.
I think. They were both reporters. Stephanie Fowler was a DDW
yeah.
reporter. It was really good. So, the reporters I kind of hung out with, you know, Tom Towsley, UPI,
mm-hmm.
then just reached, I think he's still with Wyden. He'd probably have some great fix stories.
He's UPI?
He was UPI.
Yeah. My dad was one of the co-founders of UP Boo.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow. God, you know all this. You're royalty here, Jim. You're aristocracy about all this stuff. Don Jepson, who was the Oregon Journal reporter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Don Hamilton, who was a reporter back then. Yeah,
yeah,
he was already covering in the early 80s. I think I met young Don Hamilton back then. You know, I was Willamette Week, so let's see. Coyne was Chuck... I think Chuck Diamond. He might have come later. But Stephanie certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, she's on everybody's list, especially because the Atiyah people felt that she was not a very friendly person to them, and so those are the. There's a nice tension there.
No, you got to say, you know, there was a lot of the who stole our cheese back then. You know, I thought the race in 1980 was going to be close. I remember going over to Larry Colton's house to watch it with a couple of other Willamette people, and we were just jaw-dropping, aghast at not only Reagan's margin of victory, but the fact that he was, that all these senators that we had all grown up admiring were getting thrown out of their butts, you know, and Frank Church, and you know, et cetera. And that, yeah, that sense of, you know, who moved my cheese, and the, you know, by 1980, of course, the economy had fallen into deep, you know, a deep dive, the interest rates had spiked, the misery index, et cetera, that, you know, you were able to kind of overlook during 78 and 79, and stuff was, you know, stuff was running up. And, you know, how could this happen and happen so quickly? And you know, I'd actually covered the 1980 presidential campaign for Land Week. I talked to him into letting me have 6 weeks to, if I paid my own expenses, which
there you go.
Made me last about 6 weeks, and my credit card finally got in Wisconsin. But yeah, so then, you know, you come back into, and now suddenly we're into these multiple special sessions, and I can't remember how many we had, but you know, 81 regular session, cut, you know, later in 81, 82 a couple times, Grattan Cairns is the House Speaker, Ed Fadley is the Senate President. These guys are as conventionally liberal, you know, as they get. Fadley's a, you know, is just a well, anyway.
Yeah, he's Ed.
Yeah, he's Ed. Pompous and everything else. One of my friends in 75, the story he tells is that he was the guy that Robert Frisbee, who's still around. He's a few years older than me, but he had gotten a job as a page as well, or assistant sergeant of arms, and but he said, you know, this is getting really boring, and he ended up landing a halftime job as a committee administrator for human resources. Kind of Keith Burbage was the chair, real nice, dapper Salem guy, about 5'4", and so I ended up saying, well, gee, if I could do that, you could do that, and I ended up with Halleck. And one day he said, well, I need a space to work. There's just no space. It was for the wings of the Capitol you know, and all that. And so, well, there's this storage room underneath the gallery of the Senate. You know, it kind of goes right underneath where the galleries come down. And, you know, if you're able to clean it out and, you know, you do that, he gets the key and he opens the door and catches Ed Fadley in flagrant. In flagrante delecto with not only the woman who's his legislator, but the woman who ran against him for election. He's then hired, and he's stooping underneath it, and it's all of this. The woman pulls the door and runs out. He was afraid for his job for a while, all those special sessions, all the cuts. Gosh, you look back on it later, you know. The unitary tax and understanding that, and how could you do a corporate tax break? Corporations are the bad guys. But he greased the 8% income tax surcharge, 10% surcharge or something. You know, how that deal came down, who was brokering it, who was in the room, the back and forth. The kicker, of course, comes out of it.
79.
79 when Tio's
first response to Prop 13.
One of the first responses. And you can see that in what they're putting on the ballot. They're kind of going, you know, there's something going on here. In fact, in 1986, you talk about trying to throw everything you can to kind of stop this train you see coming down the tracks, and these guys are pretty, you know, they're not giving up. We did... and Jane Ceeson was part of this. Vera was a big advocate of it. I take a little bit of credit for it because I was one of the big advocates on her staff for it. But it was like if people keep saying no to things, put together alternatives and do an advisory vote and put it on the ballot that's non-binding. But and we did a bunch of public hearings, and I had to staff these around the state, and we came up with four ideas: two income tax base and two property, two sales tax base, one goods only. So. And you can then do the analysis of ballots and say, well, at least 50% voted for one of the sales tax ones.
Right.
Because we did a poll afterwards. But it was just that, you know, we've got to do something, but what is it? We don't want to have to cut government. Can we do it in a revenue-neutral way? And, you know, Vic had been supportive. The 85 was a revenue-neutral, if I remember right. And maybe it was a little revenue-positive, but not much. And, of course, the later sales tax that got talked about were revenue-positive.
Yeah.
You know, even Frank Moore, which I continue to think was... is never going to fly, because you're asking people to do two very difficult things at once. And, you know, let's change the tax system first and then have the conversation about should we be investing more money, or if you do it at the right time in the cycle, you know, the economy will pick up and you'll give it credit.
Yeah.
So I did not, you know, I was kind of tending to listen to all the, you know, what Troop and the legislature is very dominated by Democrats. I'm trying to remember the partisan control numbers back then, but it's still pretty strong. There's no question about coalitions, and you have some conservative D's, but then you got the liberal R's like the Mary Alice Fords and even Ted Van Fleet, John Schoon, who was out of Monmouth. John would be a fun guy. John was one of the real gentlemen of the Senate, banker in Dallas, and someone was telling me he's still alive. But the, you know, so I left in 82. So I was at the Washington Monthly in the beginning in January of 83, and didn't really come back until late 85. No, late 84.
Uh-huh.
And then I got a job working for Vera in the 85 session. So I was right in the middle of the economy's back. We're talking about the sales tax. It's a typically a Republican idea. Vera, though, and John have and a few others have said, no, the Democrats need to change their mind on this, even though the platform of the party is against it. It's the responsible thing to do. And yeah, and I thought that 80, and I'm no longer working in Willamette Week, so I'm not writing these punky, you know, things. And, getting to be pretty impressed in those last 2 years about what Vic is trying to do. But, of course, I'm a Democrat, and Neil, and close to that. I ended up not doing any work for that, for the Goldschmidt campaign. I just worked for Vera through the whole time. But, you know, we were very happy when he won. Vic's a lame duck, you know, Oregon comeback, et cetera, et cetera. Well, it's good to be good. It's better to be lucky. Neil, you know, kind of gets lucky here, too. And Norma, for some reason, can't inherit the, you know, the mantle.
But David Sarazon described it as she was running on competence and we wanted flesh.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And we'd had Vic, and Vic was, you know, people probably joke, zero charisma Tia, you know, smoked all the time, and just had that kind of, you know, you. It's always fun to look at the pictures in the blue book. I pulled out the one in my class about a young Mark Hatfield in, I think, 55, you know, there's 29 white Caucasian guys with. You know, and he's, you know, hair, style, the smile, the movie star looks.
He's like 30 years old.
Exactly. He's kind of this bolt of electricity, 33, and soon to be Secretary of State. So, you know, Vic's picture would have been at home at that earlier era. I mean, he said he got elected in 58, which was a big Democratic landslide year. You know, 58, the Republicans got their shirts handed to them all over the country because we had the 57 downturn. But Washington County is probably pretty safely Republican, I suppose. I'm trying to remember, but I was only 3 years old. But So the other stories I did, I really took off after John Lobdell, who was the PUC commissioner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he also was the heir of nuclear power.
Yeah.
And Lloyd yeah. Marbette and the activism around that. Vic was probably just solidly nuclear power supporter. PG, Pebble Springs, you know, we reporters at Willamette Week, that's a terrible, awful idea. Mm-hmm. And people like John Lobdell are helping enable it to happen. I did a big series on the mental health system.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I had any reason to talk to Vic about that. That was more of a local story, but also a little bit of a state story. And it actually was a story that liberals didn't look real well on either, because they'd supported deinstitutionalization and then not had supported the, you know, the funding for it.
Yeah.
You know, I did the good, the bad, and the awful in all those rounds, 79 and 81. The other statewide stories that I ended up doing. I'll tell you, Willamette Week is going to be a rich place to look through.
Yeah. Do you know if Multnomah County's got a complete collection, or do I need to go to the Willamette Week more? Do you have a sense of that at all?
I don't, but you could just call Mark Zussman. I think they have it all. I actually threw mine out about a year and a half ago because he assured me that they were all digitized now, so I haven't gone back and checked. But they have the big books in the library. I think they would be fine with that. I wasn't the only one who covered the legislature. I think Alan Weber did a little bit of it before I got there. Meeker would go down some. Ron Buell would do some covering. Mm-hmm. But I was the one who kind of would go down. There used to be a train that ran. Left here at 7 o'clock or thereabouts and returned at like 4:30 or 5. I think Russell Sadler.
Oh, that's great.
And I used to get on the train and Hardy Myers would be there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I'd talk to Hardy. It was... you know, the amount of boom and, you know, and then, you know, hitting bottom and coming out. I think most people think now the unitary tax did really help. I think the Intel story, mm-hmm. someone has told that story, I think, pretty well, maybe mm-hmm. not.
I've seen stuff from Intel.
You know, it has a Tektronix element to it, and that was in Vic's backyard. I mean, I remember, you know, Tektronix when my dad got laid off and, I think it was 79, no, mm-hmm. 81 or 82. Yeah, he was 59, so it would have been 82. And they were at 21,000 people in the late 70s. I mean, my God, they were high tech before you called it that. Yeah. And
I asked Vic about that, and from his point of view, because Hewlett Packard had gone into Corvallis. Tektronix was here before he became governor.
Right. Oh, and, my God, and, the Tektronix was.
Tektronix has been here forever.
Yeah.
And he. For in his mind, Tektronix was the key to the whole thing. Then you get the Japanese to come in and stuff, but there's already this.
Oh, it's a absolutely
this thing set up here,
and you get
a culture.
You get spinoffs. You get ESI. You have people, and there's some story, apocryphal or not, I don't know, but you know it's the early '80s, and this small company called Intel is scouting around, and Doug Strain, I think, was part of this. There's land up here, and you already got the workers. My mom was one of them. My dad was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hatfield had started, had mm-hmm. been big on that. Got Oregon Graduate Institute right. because we don't have a Portland-based, and this was a workaround, so mm-hmm. you didn't have to take on Corvallis and Eugene and create OGI. Huge missed opportunity to make more of that. But, you know, of all the bets you would have put, I mean, if you go back to 1980, you know, let's say it's 82 or 84, there's a lot of companies in this kind of new digital mm-hmm. you know, mainframe computer sort of stuff, and Intel wasn't especially distinguished at the time. Lots of them came on, blinked off the landscape. But there was something about, you know, once they put roots here, what they found, the support they got, and, you know, it's a serendipity. It's like, you know, Bill Gates, Microsoft, happens to be Washington. Gee, too bad we didn't have that. Why is that? Well, we had Tektronix, and then we had Intel that came out of that. And you've seen the big planetary map that has been put together.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of what would be really fun about this biography is to is to kind of tell the business story. Yeah. Almost kind of. Remember, my dad would bring some of these old oscilloscopes home, you know, about like this, tubes, and he worked quality control, and he, you know, he had an idea maybe make a lamp or two out of them. And I remember asking him once about who else does these, you know, makes this oscilloscopes. Mm-hmm. Competition. I might have been in high school or something like that. He goes, ah, there's this company down in California, I suppose, you know, it's Hewlett-Packard, but it won't amount to anything. And the two, the course that both of those companies took over time, and why Tektronix then stumbled and fell to, you know, almost disappearing today versus, you know, Hewlett-Packard. Someone once said that Tektronix had more patents produced than any other company for this period of time, and they never knew what to do with them.
Yeah.
I mean, they were brilliant engineers, and, oh, that sounds interesting, go do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I remember once when I came out of the Secretary of State and was just kind of looking and wanting to, just intrigued with this new economy and what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a company called Network Elements, which got a huge amount of venture capital and then just cratered. But there was this guy named Phil Cassidy, ponytail, walking around, you know, in his Birkenstocks. And I remember going in to talk to the guy who was thinking of hiring me, although I never mounted anything. Yeah, see that guy over there? He's got more patents than his name. He worked at Tektronix all these years. You know, calculators that they did and all that. And that was, you know, again, Vicatian and his times.
Yeah.
I've always thought it would be a great business book, Tektronix versus Hewlett-Packard, as kind of lessons in the rise and fall of corporations, what went right, what didn't. You know, it ought to be a Harvard case study at some point. Maybe it is for all I know. But that was very much, Vic's world as well. So, there was probably virtually nothing that Vic Atiyah probably could have done from Willamette Week's eyes other than lose that would have made us happy. We were very enthusiastic about, you know, Kunal Agassi, the bright young attorney, and ex-Marine, you know, and support plant closure legislation. And you know, stuff's going on with this, you know, during the campaign that, you know, probably distracted him. But he just gets his head stomped in, and you know, we almost lose the land use. I mean, Tom McCall in '82 is, you know, the iconic story, the dying breath.
Yeah.
To beat the thing, and he barely beats it, dies a few months later. God, there's some apocryphal story about the, you know, Vic Atiyah looking down from the balcony.
That's in Brent's book.
Is it in
Brent's? We think it comes from Ron Schmidt.
Yeah.
Who was a big Atiyah guy, but a bigger McCall guy, and got burned on Atiyah.
And what's the story exactly that he kind of just said,
it's
now I don't have to compete with Tom McCall?
Yeah, they stand and they're closing a door, and it's like Vic has this look on his face about, why are these people doing all this stuff?
Yeah.
You know, but it's that kind of
that sort of thing. And you know, in the 78 campaign, I was at the Benson Hotel, and I did this kind of, you know, I'm just kind of at the periphery. And Vic Atiyah comes over to shake Tom's hand.
Yeah.
Doesn't, McCall won't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, and at the primary night, and is very ungracious in defeat, from my recollection of it. He might have. So, wish I don't know how much
is that. No, this is great. This is great.
But it's kind of the zeitgeist of the time. I mean, you could argue that between, you know, when he ran in 74 and when he leaves office in 85, that, you know, we're still doing this to ourselves about how great Oregon is. We still have enough of that, you know, bottle bill, land use planning, innovation, odd even gas, energy conservation. But, you know, we have Reagan in office now, and he gets, of course, reelected in 84. You know, Measure 5 is on the horizon. We're spending a lot of our time kind of trying to both, you know, stave it off. Well, if we just do enough, we can keep it at bay if they know we're trying, because, you know, they really don't want to cut all these services, and finally people go, you know, you just had your chance. You haven't been able.
And the fascinating thing is it's Portland. I just love that. Phil Stanford. know, he wrote about it and said, you know, this was passed by Portland at its playgrounds. Yeah. And you look at it, it was basically the coast here and then, like, Jackson County or something.
Yeah, Multnomah did carry Multnomah County. Well, Lamont-Week endorsed it, you know, in 1990. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, they saw it as a, you know, you got to break the system so we can get true revenue reform and sales tax. And, of course, then, you know, Barber comes in, tries a conversation with Oregon. It, you know, it, mm-hmm. it fails. Never even gets to the ballot.
Yeah.
Becomes part of, you know, Kitzhaber. And, you know, when people assess Kitzhaber's legacy in terms of, you know, what he, both what he accomplished and what at the end of the day he failed to do, you know, they need to talk about his failure to do any kind of tax reform.
Yeah.
You never even try. He never spent the political capital from 95 to 2003, and he didn't spend it in his first term. And while there was talk about it, about a year before the election, there was no talk about it during the election. So he did not get elected, you know, putting a stake on that because, you know, it would have put him at risk maybe of losing. He only wins by 50,000 to cover Oregon.
I was stunned after the 98 election because not only did he beat Sizemore, but in a lot of Republican districts, he got more votes than the Republican in the legislature.
Yeah.
In those same districts.
Yeah, if there was
it's like, this is called political capital.
Right, 1999, political capital.
Geez Louise. And got nothing.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was stunned that nothing came out of that.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's like so many of us, as we kind of look back, he seemed to take public administration seriously. Now, you know, who ran his departments? You know, Fred Miller would be a great person to talk to because, you know, Fred, I think, came on in the Department of Transportation and might have started under Vic. That sense of, you know, how he dealt with managers, whether it was he, whether it was Jerry or other people, but, you know, what he expected of them, you know, simpler times, obviously, but, you know, you got a sense that he understood how to bring in decent management talent, let them manage and not micromanage them. You know, John Yunker was from that era. John, I don't know if John Ratford is, who was a state controller, but he might have been, you know, John. John's still around. But if you just kind of find some old hands from that era about, you know, serious of management, Goldschmidt was kind of flash, bringing all the young people, clean house. You know, I think Barbara, I think, was more serious about that stuff than people give her credit for. But I don't, you know, John never conveyed a sense that that was, you know, that was to be left to somebody else. It was very hands off. But Detia was probably more hands on.
Yeah.
And
he had weekly meetings with all the department heads.
Yeah, and the question is, are they for show or are they meaningful? Yeah. Is he kind of pushing them? And what are some of those kinds of stories? Because, you know, I doubt a cover or, you know, he wouldn't have let a Rocket King or a Bruce Goldberg be in charge of, you know, a massive IT project. He would have said, well, who's really good at this?
And
who has expertise in that? So read that stuff in Willamette Week and then come back and ask me more questions about this stuff, you know, where I reported on it. I think I threw out all my notebooks and scribbles, but at a certain point, they're just, you know, what do they do?
So, one scandal possible and one your impressions.
Okay.
A scandal. It's funny talking to people. You know, I'm doing the Atiyah biography. When I was at University of Portland, one of my colleagues there, much older, always talked about Vic was the dumb Atiyah brother. So the real kind of, and they grew up in the same neighborhood. Things around that, but people like that, and then people that I run into, the Atiyah brothers buy up property where the Mount Hood Freeway is going to go.
Oh, interesting. I didn't
know. And I've never heard anything about it. You know, nothing. It's so
Which stretch of along Division?
I don't know.
Yeah, you should look at where that route is because years later I went, oh, I thought it was going to go up Powell.
I think it was Powell too.
There was land, a lot of land bought up along Powell, but I think it was also, there was a Division Clinton Street corridor.
Okay.
And, you know, which given Division Street Clinton today is pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it only went out to 82nd.
Yeah.
And it would hook into I-205, so you're kind of going, I thought it would go to Mount Hood. No, it just went directly to Mount Hood.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
But no, I never heard that.
Okay. Second, one, I did the Oregon Encyclopedia Project article on Vic, which is fascinating because it takes them a long time to respond.
Huh.
But the back and forth. But one of the anonymous reviewer comments was the unitary tax. A bad idea because it really hits schools hard, the money coming out of the budget for that. And I haven't been able to find any evidence of that. If it's something that was politically talked about, then that's important. But I haven't found.
Well, you would probably find that in Willamette Week. I mean, I'm sure we hated it. Because it's special session and for the sole purpose of doing it,
which is when?
In 84.
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, by then, the Japanese, connection, too, is very, very,
and very clear.
Strong and clear, and very, there's very probably clear. Some honorary councils that are still around, and why Vic, particularly zeroed in on that. There's a guy named Bob Scanlon. Do you know Bob Scanlon?
I've heard the name.
Bob is a great storyteller. He's worth talking to. It's Kemper Scanlon Bard. He's a big property investment company. Bob, very early on, was part of that Japanese. He can tell the story about, the people that worked on
the memo lining up the votes for the unitary tax.
Isaac Regenstrife. All these people are around. I know Isaac quite well.
So that's Jerry writing down names, and then Vic's handwriting saying, just writing down the names of the ones that he knows are behind it.
Oh, God, you should say that. This is funny. So he's got all these folks, right? He's got everybody on board.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt like it was just a, they'd really lined up their ducks.
Yeah.
And it's AEA, and it's maybe has to do with Intel and how many people does Intel have at that point? And how many did they have subsequent to it? But it probably wasn't just Intel. I don't know whether... where timber companies were on it, whether there was some kind of difference within the business community about it. Afraid that if they cut those taxes, they'd raise other kinds of corporate taxes.
Yeah.
But it sounds like, he's lined up his ducks on it pretty well.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it would have, you could have definitely argued it in the short term, taking money out of schools.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're reducing corporate income taxes.
Yeah. Right?
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Okay. And 84 is a... up year, you're seeing revenue increases that are 20-25% per annum, or per biennium during those times. Was there much opposition at all when it finally came to the vote?
No.
Okay.
But it's also the unitary taxes. I'm going to interview actually Barbara this afternoon. But there was a sense by a lot of people that most people who voted really didn't know what the unitary tax was.
Mm-hmm.
And, economic development. Just kind of...
When did we pass the lottery? 82? For economic development?
I think it might be 84.
Maybe 84.
It's just the last 2 years of Vic.
Eco-diva is on everybody's mind. Not enough we can do that would, nothing. We got to... although, I think it's 84, I think it is. Yeah, 84. November 84. Constitutional Amendment, Denver State Lottery Commission. Passes almost 2-1.
Yeah.
And, that's right after the unitary tax.
Yeah.
I mean, people are still, 84, we're still remembering. It's still hard, Unemployment rates are probably still in double digits a lot of places around the country. The timber industry is flat on its back still. We're trying to open up a lot more federal forest land for cutting, in part to bring the price of the raw material down, because a lot of people have gone out of business with those contracts to buy it this much of board foot and finish it, sell it at this.
And Spotted Owl is still... about a year away.
About a year away.
It's because it's like... summer, fall, 85 is when I find the first Spotted Owls. People, but memories are fantastic. I mean, people conflate that with the 82 recession.
Yeah. nothing to do with that. There's a housing crisis and hyperinflation and just the things that it was demand driven and so gosh, now that demand is back, we just start cutting the forest again like we used to. No, I think the unitary tax in the short term probably had a fiscal impact to it. It's a corporate income tax break. Mm-hmm. But as you saw, those Democrats, including Ed Fadley, are getting behind it.
Yeah.
And arguably a lot of people then. Who was the economic development director at the time? You know, Bill Scott would be worth talking to. Came in with Neil. I saw Bill. I didn't talk to him, but he just saw him at the Cadillac Cafe just 3 days ago. He's still around. He ran Zipcar for a while. Mm-hmm. I think he's retired. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Bill would have that kind of Goldschmidt but smart guy looking at these things. I mean, you've got
so what did we get from a TA and what did we do with it kind of thing?
And he's always struck me as a pretty thoughtful, reasonable guy. And, of course, you know, you can fill in lots of other fun. I mean, you know, there's Don Mazziotti was a young punk. Angus Duncan, you know, was certainly a guy that, you know, they talked to then. You have too much fun.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. That's one reason. I mean, there's a lot of people to interview and talk to, but that's why I'm basically saying February and March.
You're basically
keep going.
Yeah, you're basically kind of talking about Vic's term about when Brent was talking to people in the 90s with, or late 80s actually, about McCall.
Yeah.
So McCall had been dead just about four or five years, but a lot of people were still. Could remember him way back. You may have a little trouble getting people to remember his first campaign in 58, but I'm sure you have.
But you know, it's there was an abortive attempt to do a biography about 10 years ago, and about a year ago, Vic sent me from that person had sent. Here's who I interviewed.
Oh my God!
And I've actually talked to about 2/3 of the people, and they've never heard of her. So there you go. But Vic went through and wrote D for dead and F for frail. My first ones were find all the F's.
Find all the F's, yeah. Wow.
And, you know, there's, but it, I, if she, it, we don't know if she actually did any work, but, you know, she's the one who would have talked to Hatfield about this.
Yeah. Who is the person?
Margie, she's over at Special Olympics.
Margie Hunt.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked for Lynn Lundquist. Margie's a good person. She's a... I don't know why she stopped.
It just didn't go. I didn't know she worked for Lynn Lundquist.
Yeah, she was Lynn's.
Lynn and I were tight. So.
She was Lynn's person for a number of years. I liked her. She was not as rabidly partisan as people that came later. I think she wrestled with it as it kind of changed that way.
Mm-hmm.
But, who was in their 90s who really else that you might not immediately think about
one of Vic's two closest friends just died between the memorial service and when I started doing this.
Who's that?
There was two guys. There was Jim, Tom Galt is the guy that died, but they grew up together. In the office when Vic was governor, the priority of calls was Jim, whatever his last name is. His calls could come in and disturb Vic at any time, and Tom was next, and Dolores was third.
So there's a guy named Jim Thayer, who started that Thayer Stationery.
Oh yeah, Tommy Thayer's dad. Tommy Thayer's on our board.
Okay, and Jim Thayer Jr. I went to high school with.
Uh huh.
And I don't know if Jim is still around, but Jim was adjutant general.
Oh.
And, you know, so was Fred Rosenbaum.
Uh-huh.
When he passed away. But, you know, Vic.
Because
I think they go back, because Thayer was Washington County.
Yeah.
And, you know, who are the, you know, the longtime Washington County folks? Is Tom Hartung still alive?
No. Yeah, he died years ago.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I thought he did too.
It's kind of the last time a lot of these people got together was Ken Jefferson's funeral out in Red River.
Yeah,
it's like Vic and Vern Duncan drove out together.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people went.
Yeah. You know, Monroe Sweetland passed away a few years ago.
Yeah. I got to know him in the last 5 years, I give talks at the Rose Villa. He would just come and ask for a ride home, and it's like, you know, riding along with Noah or something. It's fantastic conversations.
You know, I think I would go talk to Norma sooner rather than later.
Okay.
Rather than, you know, kind of wait to go through everything. You know, write it down, circle back, and know that the documents that you see are probably better. But as I said, I think her longer term memory is pretty darn good,
mm-hmm.
and she would have some insight into the Hatfield stuff. I'm sure you're talking to Jerry Frank.
Yeah, I will talk to Jerry Frank. Turns out he and Jerry Thompson don't talk to each other.
Okay.
So. Yeah, but those are the kind of things that are fun.
But he always likes being, you know, solicited, I think he would be a really very good source on that.
Yeah.
You know, Antoinette would be worth talking to.
I was wondering about that, because
the person to get to her is
Nancy. OPD just played the Hatfield thing again last night.
Yeah, they did last night.
Yeah, it's against the Academy Awards at the end.
Which I didn't watch, but...
As I was watching that, I was thinking, you know, I wonder how much Mark and Antoinette talked. Because Antoinette, I think, would be good.
Yeah, and, you know, Carrie Timchuk would probably be the person you'd talk to mm-hmm. about how best to approach, if at all. She's also gotten to be pretty good friends, apparently, with Nancy Hales, who's here, Charlie's mm-hmm. wife, and, mm-hmm. and Nancy has an office here at Portland State, because she runs a program. But, you know, Doris Penwell, the younger wife of Clayton Penwell, and Doris was McCall's private secretary and continued to work in state government. And I saw Doris. When did I see Doris last? But it was fairly recently. Oh, I think I ran into her at the after party of the screening. And, you know, Carrie Timchuk, you know, knows all these folks.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot of folks in their 80s who would have remembered, you know, when Atiyah first came on the scene in 58.
Yeah.
And spanned all that. And that's and Carrie would probably know a lot of those folks. Probably not too happy that he gave all this stuff to Pacific rather than the Oregon Historical Society, but who knows? I don't think he probably would care that much. You know, the Hatfield stuff is there, the Goldschmidt stuff, who knows where the Goldschmidt stuff is. The state never got it back. I know Roy Turnbaugh was trying to fight for it because Goldschmidt didn't want to give it away.
Yeah.
For reasons that now, in retrospect, may be a little bit more clear.
Yeah.
But, you're gonna have a lot of people at, I think, with, you know, that, you know, they'll just know lots of great details about stuff. But I think it's really right is to do it in terms of Vic Atiyah and the times, because it really was the transition from Oregon being the kind of, you know, natural resource old state. I mean, Tom kind of ushers us into that whole thing of environmentalism, and Vic, though a supporter of land use planning, was never, he wasn't as environmental but was still pretty reasonable about it. But almost a last gasp of a certain kind of Republican in the state, but also a more modern Oregon in which our problems are more complex and they're not amenable to such kind of simple, cheap progressivism things like, let's just regulate our way,
right.
or let's do a bottle bill,
and
put a deposit on, odd even gas and the like. We never were quite willing to invest our public money in it because we wanted to, be a low tax state, and Atiyah never tried anything in terms of big new spending programs. It wasn't the time we had Ronald Reagan, so he kind of, and arguably, even the Democrats who ran against him, kind of with the promise of the return to Eden, McCall, Franklin Goldschmidt, They, in a sense, didn't understand what Vic might have understood, which is that things were different now.
Yeah.
And we couldn't just coast on our reputation for some clever flashy kinds of things. Yeah. The problems were deeper and more endemic, and mm-hmm. and we had to bring maybe some better modern management to it, and been a couple of solutions for international trade. And mm-hmm. And it wasn't just the Japanese. I mean, you look at stuff with South Korea.
Yeah.
At the beginning, the openings of the China market. He was there, when Nixon, right after Nixon went to China. And had an international sense from his, maybe just from his rug business, but other things as well.
Yeah.
Fought exactly. in a war, right? He fought in Europe?
No, he did not. He was injured. Okay. But his brothers
both, did.
Okay. Both, and then they were... 50 years ago, right, or 70 years ago, they were both captured in the Battle of the Bulge.
I got to open your door because I've got to go after them.
So his brothers were captured in the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah.
My dad was
yeah.
in the Battle of the Bulge yeah. and was not captured.
But, great quote that's too long for me to actually play it for you, but somebody in Neil's office about 2 years in goes up to Vic and says, "You made this look a lot easier than it is."
That is a great quote.
Because yeah. when Neil came in, he was throwing out the dead wood.
Oh, yeah.
Vic saw him throwing out people who knew what was going on. And Vic went on his first overseas, Neil's first overseas trip with him, pass on the torch, introduce, and Neil would basically have none of it. And just fascinating dynamics.
Oh, I bet
so
that
it'd be
was.
Great to interview Neil, but, he's clearly, that's not going to happen.
Well, Mike, you don't lose anything for asking.
No.
Neil has some rehabilitating and stuff that I hope he thinks. I'm sure he thinks about it on some level every day. What he's willing to do about it or not.
Yeah.
People still see him at Northwest Portland every now mm-hmm. and then. He's got supposedly has a place in France, but spent some time here. And you know what? This stuff with Kitsaw just as the thing with Neil made Bob Packwood. Of course, you're going to talk to Packwood.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You talk to him?
I haven't yet, but at the memorial service.